listen to you every time.
In the heart of this great city, we saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. September the 11th. September the 11th. September the 11th.
September 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 11th,
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 September 11th,
September 11th.
September 11th,
September 11th.
September 11th,
September 11th.
September 11th, 2001.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein.
Saddam, Saddam, Saddam,
Saddam,
Saddam,
Saddam,
Saddam,
Saddam,
Saddam,
Saddam,
Saddam,
Saddam,
Saddam Hussein.
War and danger. Continuing danger.
Hour of danger.
Very, very dangerous world.
A grave new threat.
Horrific acts of atrocities, murderous regimes dedicating to killing us,
tyranny and terror,
slaughtered thousands,
weapons of mass destruction,
weapons of mass destruction,
weapons programs,
the deadliest of weapons,
terrible weapons,
nuclear weapons,
nuclear weapons,
poison gas,
torture chambers,
mass graves,
deadly technologies,
radical ideology of hate,
terror of threats,
terror,
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 war on terrorism,
war against terrorism,
global war on terror,
global terrorism,
global terrorism,
global terrorism,
global terrorism,
global terrorism,
global terrorism,
global terrorism.
Global terrorism.
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 The evil terrorists.
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 You're listening to Wake Up with Ab. On this show, we talk about the biggest media hoax of our time, 9/11, and all the children she spawned since then. You can call us at 518-907-4904 or at Skype, contact ab.arato99. We're streaming 24 hours a day from radio.abarato.info, the same place you can find all of our archives. The show is usually live Saturdays at 8 p.m., but we may live broadcast any evening time as guests become available. Don't miss these shows by signing up at radio.abarato.info to be notified by email. Now, on with the show. Good evening, everybody. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio. Old name was Radio Ab, but we're now doing a transition to a new website called fakeologist.com. Today is Saturday, August 17th, 2013. Starting the show a little early tonight because we have a special guest, a fellow talk show host, and his name is Lennon Sherman Honor. And this is episode 56, by the way, that you're listening to. Just a couple show notes before we begin. We have a new chat at fakeologist.com. You will have to log in to the website at fakeologist.com to get on the chat. Just click on the radio button on the top and then click on chat. Or if you're just on the main page, the chat is off to the right side scroll. We have a backup chat. We used to use radioab.chattango.com. That still works. Obviously, tonight the stream is working, which is great. So without further ado, without too many more show notes, we'll get right into speaking with Lennon honor tonight. And Lennon, it's an honor.
Well, I thank you so much. I'm indeed honored, and I've considered to be a privilege to spend some time and talk with you about this most important topic.
Oh, you're very gracious. I heard you on the John Friend show, and then I went to your website, and you definitely have the gift of communication. I have to give it to you right now. So if I'm not quite up to your standard, please forgive, but I have much to learn. And I was very impressed.
I appreciate the kind words. Let me just say that Mr. Friend, he is an awesome host. And so it was very easy for me to talk with him. And I can already tell it's easy for me to talk with you. So I will do my best.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah, let's just start off with something real simple. Your name is very unique. How did that, what's the basis or background of that name? Because I haven't really heard of a name in that way. Can you
So Lennon Sherman Honor. So my father, his name was Lennon Honor Jr.
Okay.
And his father was Lennon, we just called him Grandpa, but Lennon Honor Sr. And it's actually Gaelic, but my grandfather, he wasn't my biological grandfather, but he was the man who raised my father. His name was Lennon. He was raised down south in Louisiana. So Lennon was actually, it's actually a derivative of Lenore.
Okay.
And then my middle name, Sherman, that was my grandfather's, the man who raised my father, one of his best friends. So they named me Sherman. And then the last name Honor is just, you know, what's been transmitted over the generations. And actually, if you do the etymology, my name in full translates to beautiful lover.
Ooh, what a great pickup line.
Yes, yes. So I'm already married and everything. My wife and I, we have 5 children, and she didn't find my name to be spectacular at all.
Did she ask you to explain your name and you could slip in that beautiful lover line with her?
No. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to do that back then, those many years ago.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's a very unique name, and you've got a website that I'll just quickly tell everyone about. It's on episode 56 on my blog entry, and it's LennonHonor.com. You've got LennonHonorFilms.com. You've got tons of YouTube videos on the Lennon Honor YouTube site. It's all linked from your website. So you are tremendously prolific, and tonight we're going to talk about the book, I suppose, although we could talk about so much other stuff that you produce. You're a one-man production machine. And your book is called... go ahead.
You know, let me just say, my wife helps.
Oh, does she? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
she's been very supportive of me over the years. So I must say that in order for me to produce the content that I have, I've had to have a very supportive wife, and my wife has done that. So I got to honor her at this time.
Well, very good. Well, let me just give you a bit of background about myself, because I haven't really introduced myself to you. I just came to you out of the blue. And I'll just tell you that I started investigating 9/11 about a year and a bit ago. I woke up to this whole thing in about April 2012. Now, of course, I was around and paying attention in 2001, but at the time, it just was a big event to me that someone somewhere was looking into, and something budged me, I suppose is the right word, last year with regards to the United States government. And for some reason, I just started picking up on the topic, looking into it, and I was pretty surprised that I had not noticed the wealth of information out on the internet about 9/11. And I went through quite a maze of rabbit trails, which anyone who's listening can go to my website, fakeologist.com, and go to the top and click rabbit trails. And essentially just get a view of how I got to where I am today, which was quite a wild ride, to say the least. And I'm just shocked at the point I'm at now, to the point where now I'm quite disbelieving of almost everything and everything I see and hear, which in a way is good, but in a way is very disconcerting. So... I'm afraid, at least for the beginning of my journey into 9/11, I was under what you would call fear-based mind control plus one or two. I was just deeply controlled, and I felt like I was in a haunted house. Everywhere I turned, it got scarier and scarier. So now, of course, I've come to a different conclusion about what happened on 9/11. So I won't taint your view of 9/11 right away with my view, but essentially I'm quite relieved to know that most of the programming we're getting through the media, I believe, is just fear-based, fear-mongering, and not a whole lot really negative is happening in the world. So I would like to say that I have removed myself from the mind control. And in your book, I think you had some examples right near the end about how to extricate yourself from this maze. But we'll get to that as we progress through your book. So why don't you give us just a little bit of background on how you came about looking into 9/11 and where you were on 9/11 and what your journey was like starting September 11, 2001.
Yes, and I think that's probably something that a lot of people can relate to, that September 11, 2001 and the journey from that point. And I, like you, you know, if I go back, I guess we can say almost 12 years ago now, mm-hmm. I was living I was living in Oakland, California, which is the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And that was around the time I met my wife. And I remember driving my wife to work early in the morning in Pacific Standard Time. And I happened to turn the radio on, and there was these reports of a plane crashing inside to the first tower. At least that was what the report was. And we listened to it for a while. We didn't know exactly the significance of it, but the more we listened, the more we realized that there was something major taking place. So I dropped my wife off at work. I came back home, turned the television on, and just in time to see the second, or at least what we would perceive to be the second plane crashing into the second tower. And I was in a state of shock. I was under extreme levels of fear. The official version or the official story, I pretty much accepted without any critical thought. There were some things that didn't quite make sense. But at that time, I was 25 years old. I didn't really have any keen insights as to media manipulation or, you know, potential, you know, conspiracies or anything to that degree. I wasn't at that point in my life. It wasn't until years later when I began to look at media manipulation and looking at the various degrees to which people are literally mind controlled. And we were mind controlled from the mainstream news, we're mind controlled from the alternative news. But I began to look at September 11th and began to research alternative versions of what took place. Read a lot of books on the topic, watched a lot of the documentaries or the videos that were coming out. And ultimately, I got to a point where I recognized that the official version was not necessarily an intellectualized one. In other words, I considered it to be an intellectual insult, you know, to consider the official version of September 11th as being factual. So after that point, I began to, you know, because a lot of my work, especially on LennonHonorFilms.com, I deal a lot with media manipulation, mind control, subliminal messages, etc. So just mm-hmm. looking at it from the matrix and from the vantage point of how people are manipulated, and especially in terms of the human psychology being manipulated to accept fanciful stories as being true, I began to take a look at September 11th from a different vantage point. And what I really wanted to get to, even though it's important to ask the question, you know, what exactly took place on that day, who really was the organizers, who really was, or, you know, was there a group of people who put this event together that, you know, transcends the official story about these, you know, terrorists that, you know, commandeer these planes. Even beyond that, I began to look at one of the critical questions, at least from my vantage point, and that is, what was the significance and what was the impact of the trauma of that particular event, September 11, 2001? How did it impact human psychology on a global level? And that's where I got into, you know, looking at aspects of human psychology and then ultimately writing my book, The 9/11 Fear-Based Mind Control Program, which is a psychological look at September 11th. And then also looking at how mass media, in terms of it, uses this particular psychological trauma, if you will, of September 11, 2001, that has been embedded within the subconscious mind. It uses it as a tool of psychological warfare. And this is done at particular times each year. And what media does is it issues particular trigger stories that, so on a subconscious level, trigger the trauma of September 11, 2001. And whenever you trigger that trauma, people begin to feel fearful all over again. As a consequence of this fear, they begin to externalize power all over again. And then as a consequence of externalizing power, you can maintain them under control. That's precisely what took place on September 11. We were traumatized by this event. The global population was traumatized. We experienced extreme levels of fear. As a consequence, we begin to externalize power. And as a result, we were placed into a state of control in a subservient position. Mass media understanding this dynamic in terms of the psychological nature of this construct uses September 11th as it has used September 11th and the trauma associated with it as a tool of psychological warfare. So at this point now, my whole objective is to assist people in dealing with the trauma of the event. Of course, ask critical questions about, you know, whether or not the official version was true, but also to deal with the trauma, because the trauma is really what is being used against people. And it's a form of psychological warfare. So that's what I get into in terms of my book, The 9-1 Fear-Based Mind Control Program.
Mm-hmm. So how long in 2001 did it take you to start exploring alternate theories? Because for me, for years, I had no doubt that the official story was pretty close to the truth. I really bought into the theory that the world hated America for what it was doing, interfering in the Middle East. So I thought this was just desserts. I'm up here in Canada, and when we're looking at the U.S. as being an aggressive nation, we just thought, well, what do you expect? You're bombing everyone, and finally there's a little bit of payback. So when did you start to wonder, well, what is the real, what's going on here? When did you actually start questioning the official story?
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't that it was the official story per se. It's the other research topics that I was getting into. So, for instance, in and around 2004, that's when I began to ask critical questions, not necessarily about September 11, but just about the world in general, you know, about government, you know, about, you know, what people would call conspiracy theories, what I call theoretical conspiracies, you know, those times I really began to ask critical questions about that. And then it led me back to September 11th. It's almost like you research other topics and then you start to understand the different degrees of manipulation. And then you can go back and look at other particular events and then you can analyze them based upon your newfound information and levels of understanding. And that's what I did with September 11th. So I would say that probably about 2005. About 2005, maybe 2006. That's when, by that time, I had already, in my mind, I said the official version, you know, just doesn't sit right with me. And then since that time, of course, I've continued to research September 11th and a lot of other topics. And what I found is that September 11th, the official version itself, it is, in point of fact, it is the ultimate in terms of a psyops, if you will, a psychological operation designed to make people perceive one thing to be one thing, where in fact it's something totally different. And I think September 11th is probably the preeminent event that we can use as almost like a launching pad. So for me, it wasn't necessarily that I was specifically researching September 11th where I began to say, okay, wait a minute, something's not quite right. It's I was researching other topics that I recognized, you know, there's much more going on here on the planet. And then that took me back to September 11th. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. Now I really need to take a critical look at September 11th and the official story.
Okay. 2006, what kind of things were you researching?
2006. Let's see. Okay, 2006. Okay, I was into let's say information like Michael Tesorian, David Icke, Jordan Maxwell, Dr. Phil Valentine. Though that was kind of like you know, the type of information that, that I was into.
And what were they talking about? Because I never really listened to them even today. So what did they talk about in 2006?
Well, in particular, I remember David Icke had come out with a book dealing with 9-1-1. I don't know if that was in 2006. It may have been a little bit later than that. But I remember he had a book out on September 11, 2001. Michael Tesorian, I don't remember him specifically talking about September 11 too much at that time. Same thing with Jordan Maxwell. But like I said, it was more like I was researching in Michael Tesorian dealt. I got into his work because he dealt with symbolism, the subversive use of symbolism and corporate logos, that type of information. Jordan Maxwell talked a lot about conspiracy theories, and I was kind of like into that type of information for a while too as well. But that it wasn't necessarily dealing with September 11th, although David Icke did write a book dealing with September 11th. But again, studying different topics allowed me to kind of come back to September 11th a little bit later on and really kind of put, you know, pieces together. But that was kind of like the types of information I was researching into at that time.
So they were just speculating on the different alternate theories at that point, and I suppose were probably doing their own form of mind control on you at the time.
Well, I would say that I wouldn't say Jordan Maxwell per se, because I don't necessarily remember him speaking on that topic specifically, or Michael Tsarion. However, I know that David Icke, I know that he had a book out that talked, and it had quite a few different alternative takes on September 11th. Those alternative takes, though, however, it wasn't that I necessarily accepted those as being 100% factual. The point being was that at that time, I was researching into many different topics, and that was one of the books that caused me to go back and take another look at September 11, 2001.
Okay, so they got you interested, and then you started digging. So what kind of theories did you get into with regards to 9/11? Did you start watching some of the movies like I did, and really getting exposed to some of the alternate theories that really went far away from the official story?
Yes, yes. And I outlined some of those inside the book in terms of the various alternative versions of September 11, 2001. The preeminent one I talked about inside the book was a government conspiracy, which people call, 911 was an inside job. Uh-huh. I think that I adhered to that for quite some time. Well, not maybe a long time, but a significant amount of that early period of me really looking into September 11, 2001. Also, bombs in the buildings, controlled demolition, scalar weapon technology. There were documentaries or movies out dealing with that theory as well. Thermite, there was a lot of documentaries out dealing with that. There was also particular videos dealing with the notion that it was low-yield nuclear bombs or bombs on the planes. And then also there was the no-plane theory. That came a little bit later. That's where they were, things like there was holographic planes, remote control planes. I remember David Icke in his book proposed that as well, holographic projections and missiles, also stuff like there was also some of the programming was alien conspiracy, et cetera. So a lot of those types of topics I was looking into. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean that I was abiding to those, but they were influencing my sense that there was something else that took place that didn't necessarily correlate to the official account of September 11, 2001.
So were you more interested in the whole PSYOP / mind control aspect at that point? Or were you really interested in trying to figure out what happened and how we got here and why we are here today still scratching our head trying to figure out what happened?
Yeah, at that time I was more interested in trying to figure out what took place exactly.
Yes.
And I think that a lot of us, we get to that and a lot of us, we get stuck there. One of the things that took place in terms of me, on that particular pursuit was that once you get into that box, it's really a box where every single day it's about trying to find out, okay, what really happened on September 11, 2001. Then your whole life, and this is how I was for some time, my whole life it was geared towards that. So anything that I can get about September 11th, alternative version, whether it was factual or whether it was just basically theoretical or, some hypothetical, I was looking into it. And in the midst of that, and this is an aspect of mind control, because an individual, they can get so caught up in this pursuit, and it can be with any given topic, but in particular September 11th, and then all of a sudden their whole it's almost like a paradigm shift to where their whole orientation is it's all about September 11th, and now we got to wake up the sleeping sheeple. We got to wake people up. We got to fight the New World Order. It was an inside job, yelling and screaming at people, and then you really lose a touch with self in a sense. It's almost like your whole identity revolves around September 11th, 2001, and that's where I was at for quite some time. But then also what took place, which was, actually a good thing, was that I slowly came out of that. And as a consequence, I started to get into other types of information. And then at a certain point, I came back. I'm hearing a bird whistling here.
Yeah, sorry. That's my chat. It's at your end. click on the chat and click the sound button there.
Okay, in the chat. Yes. I'm not in the chat.
Yeah,
here.
If you're on my webpage on the right side, you should see a chat. Just click on the sound button. This is a new thing we just started, so everything is sort of new tonight. You're sort of getting the first round of this. So if you see in the chat, people are starting to chat, and anytime it comes in, you hear a noise. But if you just click the word "sound," it'll cross it out and turn the sound off on that.
Yeah, I'm not on your website. I'm not in the chat room. But what I was saying was that I began to research other topics. I slowly came out of that program of just everything being about September 11th and it being an inside job.
Yes.
Looking into other topics, researching other issues, Then I began to go back, and this is like, I would say within the last 3 years, I began to go back to September 11th, and I began to ask critical questions in terms of media cycles and then the psychological impact of the event. So in other words, not just asking the critical question of who did it and why, but also asking the critical question in terms of what was its lingering impact on the psychological condition of the human species. But in order to get to that point, I had to really begin to dissect media manipulation. And then also, research more into human psychology and then go back to September 11th and begin to do analysis based upon that information. And that's where this book has come out of, the 911 Fear-Based Mind Control Program.
Okay. So in the last 3 years, what kind of things did you conclude with 9/11? Because the reason I'm getting at this point is I am quite relieved at where I am in my 9/11 research, and it's really opened my eyes to the entire media mind control that you speak so eloquently about in your book. And we will go through the book, don't worry, but I'm just trying to get a feel for where you are on 9/11, because, so for instance, the alternate media, they are doing the same thing as the official story. They are driving fear into everyone's minds with their theories. And I got to a point where I was quite beside myself probably last summer when I came to the conclusion that it seemed like either it was a nuclear event at the World Trade Center or they possessed some kind of weapon that could demolecularize anything on the planet, to the point where this weapon was so powerful they could probably split the planet in half. So you can imagine the trauma that I went through at that realization, hardly knowing at all that this whole alternate media is as controlled and as set up as the mainstream media. So one way or the other, they will catch anybody who's looking into this into one of their little traps. So I'm just wondering if you ever got to that extreme position where you thought they had the ultimate sword of Damocles. I even got to a point where I thought, well, maybe this is an entity outside the United States government that's blackmailing the government with this magical weapon. So my mind was racing all over the place. I'm just wondering, did that ever occur to you? Did that ever happen to you?
Yes, okay. It happened, and not just with September 11th, but with other proposed theories too. And I think that's one of the key components to mind control is when we get so far outside of ourselves to where for instance, let me give an example, because I'm a very honest and sincere person.
Yes,
and I also, when I talk about myself and the aspects of myself that I'm not too proud of, it may be difficult for me to talk about it, but if that's what I have to do in order to prove a point, I do that. So let me just use an example, because during that time when I was researching into September 11th, I was into David Icke's book. One thing that he had propagandized, and he still continues to a degree, not as much as he used to, was this reptilian shapeshifter paradigm, which is one of the most fear-based paradigms that I have come across. Maybe, you know, more so than you know, there's been so many ones like, you know, HAARP as a weapon of mass destruction, you know, the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico and the core exit being used as a weapon of population reduction, you know, the Georgia Guidestones. I mean, there's so many different aspects of the mind control that really puts people in a state of fear. But for me, the reptilian shapeshifter propaganda really put me in extreme levels of fear. And I told this story before and I'm going to tell it here. I remember there was a time, and my oldest son, he's 9 now, so he was probably about 2, maybe 3 years old. So we're going back maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And I remember I was all into David Icke's books. I read all of his books up to that point, and I was watched all of his videos that I could find on the internet. I even ordered his videos, and one of the DVD sets was Credo Mutua and the Reptilian Agenda. And I watched that, I don't know, I could probably say hundreds of times, you know, because I was really so much.
Really?
I even bought Credo Mutua's books, which a lot of people haven't done.
I haven't heard of any of this, by the way.
Yes. And I've read all of his books. And when I talk about his books are so thick, I mean, 300, 400 pages.
Jesus.
But the point being is that I was so I was so controlled by that information. And really, the control was really fear. I was so fearful because of the information. And I remember one time, you know, I was so outside of my mental state where when it made sense. I mean, I was considering things in my mind that intellectually speaking now I look back at and I'm quite ashamed of. And I remember I was looking out the window and I was looking down the street and there was a palm tree. It was a real high palm tree. And the palm trees, you know, if you cut them properly, they have these ridges going all the way up. Right. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, and I, even as I say it now, I'm so disappointed in myself. I said to myself, you know, a reptilian shapeshifter would use that palm tree to scratch its back.
Right.
I mean, and it's funny, you know, and I can laugh at it now. Thank goodness I can laugh at it now because that means I've grown. But it's also not funny, you know.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because the whole paradigm of fear really compromises the intellectual process to where we begin to consider things that are not necessarily, we don't have any evidence or proof to back it up, like reptilian shapeshifters. Or, you know, for instance, I know that you gave reference to, you know, is there some sort of device being used or a stellar weapon technology, which is another theoretical conspiracy that's out there. I know that there was Dr. Judy Wood, she has talked about, you know, an alternative, you know, weapon that was used on that. And the thing is that if you don't have conclusive evidence or proof, it's always going to cause people to feel fearful because ultimately they don't know exactly what took place. In the absence of not knowing exactly what took place, in the midst of only hearing theories that make it seem like there's something out there that's more powerful than you, then you will always be traumatized. You will always be fearful. You will always externalize power and you will always be controlled. So let me just say this, just to pinpoint, because I had gotten to the point where I had considered many different alternative versions. It wasn't just one. It wasn't just one dominating. I was literally dominated by so many different alternative versions of what took place on September 11, 2001. But the real issue was I didn't know. And the people who were theorizing, they didn't know 100% either. And in the midst of this, what takes place? And I want people to get this because this is the protocol for mind control. You must always traumatize someone. See, it's traumatizing to get to the point where you think that there was, you know, this scalar weapon technology out there that can be, you know, used against a whole, you know, building, and it can also be used against you. Mm-hmm. It's traumatizing to think that there's reptilian shifters out there that are going to, you know, materialize and they're going to eat you and drink your children's blood. I have those thoughts, okay? It's traumatizing to think that, you know, every time that there's an earthquake, okay, someone switched on HAARP. Okay, that's traumatizing. What happens mm-hmm. is that when we are traumatized, just like on September 11th and seeing what took place, you know, unfolding on our, you know, television screen, we're traumatized. Out of the trauma comes forth fear. And out of the fear comes forth the externalization of power. And once we externalize power, whether that's to the Bilderbergs or to the reptilian shapeshifters or the New World Order or you know, to whatever the case may be, we begin to externalize power. Now we're in a state of control. That's the protocol. Trauma, fear, the externalization of power and control. So in terms of the various theoretical conspiracies that have been proposed, I have considered many of them over, you know, the years. And I have been so engulfed by many of them to where I had subjugated my intellectual process and it became an emotional thing. And that's a serious problem because when we talk about mind control, it's really about tapping into the emotions of the individual and tapping into a very specific emotion. And that emotion is that of fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fear. For to make it really simple, makes people stupid, doesn't it? You lose the connection to your consciousness, your thinking process, and it's very closely related to love. Apparently, if you love bomb somebody, a woman that you are very interested in, if you compliment them for that split second, they lose all forms of cognitive thinking, and they're very easily manipulable. Of course, alcohol works as well, but it's more reliable. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, it's the minute. It's what takes place physiologically speaking is that when an individual yes. is in a state of fear, their whole physical chemistry changes to, yes. and it adapts to that emotion because now you're either in flight or fight mode. When we're in fight or flight mode, we're not thinking critically per se, okay? And it's not an intellectual process. It's based upon a particular emotion, usually the emotion being fear. So a lot of the propaganda and programming that we get from the mainstream news and the alternative news is basically traumatizing information that makes people fearful. And then as a consequence of them being fearful, people aren't thinking intellectually. That's why me being fearful of reptilian shapeshifters, I wasn't thinking intellectually when I look at a palm tree. Instead of saying, look at that beautiful palm tree, I say to myself, that palm palms. You can be used by reptilian shapeshifters to scratch his back. That's a psychological issue. You see, that's a mental issue. So when we talk about mind control, I was literally mind controlled based upon fear propaganda of reptilian shapeshifters that would cause me to perceive a palm tree to be nothing more than a device used by reptilian shapeshifters to scratch his back. Mm-hmm. See, that degree of programming and manipulation is taking place in the mainstream news and the alternative news, and the preeminent emotion that is being stimulated is that of fear, and it compromises the intellectual process.
Right. Were those reptilian shapeshifters that big? I never got into that story, by the way. Are they giants?
That's the thing. That's the thing. There's so much conflicting information even in the reptilian shapeshifter propaganda. Some say that they're, you know, ethereal beings that materialize, or that they control people from afar. They don't necessarily materialize in physical form, but they kind of manipulate people through their genetics and their bloodline. Other people say that they live in the middle of the earth. You know, some people say that they traveled here from Mars. I mean, there's so many different and that the moon was really a base for these reptilian shapeshifters. I mean, all this propaganda, but it's really about fear. Yeah. You know, so how big are they? Are they small? Are they big? Are they really, really big? You know, or were the dinosaurs the reptilian shapeshifters? All of this type of propaganda. That's just one example. But the same thing applies to September 11 with all the various, you know, theoretical conspiracies that are propagandized. We all kind of, if we go on this, it's like this pursuit for truth. What ends up happening is we may grab onto one theory, or maybe we take another theory and we combine those two together, and then we take aspects of another one. We may even take aspects of the official version and put it into the mix. But ultimately, it's about being confused and being fearful in the process. And as a consequence, we compromise our intellectual process. That's why you will find that a lot of people who get into alternative information, and if they come out of that paradigm, they reflect back on it and they say, you know, I recognize that there was an aspect of my intellectual process that had been compromised while I was in that state. And they begin to lose out. They lose friends. They lose family members. They lose relationships. And they think that there's something wrong with all those other people, but they don't realize that, no, it's because we have been so inundated with all this fear propaganda. We become so paranoid and we disconnect from the reality that actually would actually provide us with a level of stability. And then we go on this quest to find truth. But the quest is really based upon emotionalism and then fear, too. One other thing I got to say, a lot of people, when they get into the alternative information, because they are giving so much fear and so much fear propaganda, they really get addicted to that physiological response. And so they pursue anything that can provide them with that high. And that high is based upon the emotion of fear. So you will find that, and I've been there. And I'm saying this to everyone, not just to pinpoint anyone. It's not personal. I'm saying that I've experienced this too. That I was in that mode to where I was looking for the latest conspiracy theory that would put me in a state of fear. And as soon as that one wore off, I looked for another one. I looked for another one. That's why inside my book, I pinpoint a lot of those particular conspiracy theories. And because a lot of those I actually adhere to. But in the process, what did I do? What happened to me? I was compromised. My intellectual process was compromised. And what I was really doing was not fulfilling the need to find truth. I was fulfilling the need to be fearful. And again, whenever we're fearful, we externalize power and then we're in a state of control. And a lot of people who get into this information, they may think that they're liberated. They may think that they're, quote unquote, awake, and they yell at other people and call them sheeple. But they don't realize that they, too, are being manipulated and being controlled by their need for fear propaganda.
Really? So is the need for fear kind of like saying the old joke saying, why do you keep hitting your head against the wall? And the guy answers, because it feels so good when I stop.
Yes, that's part of it.
It's crazy.
Because we can be conditioned. You know, we can be conditioned in a particular way to where we confuse fear with truth, or in some cases we perceive pain with love. You know, it's a conditioning thing. A child who's abused by their parents, and then in the child's mind on a subconscious level, when they see the parent, they say, the parent is here to love me. They are the ones who brought me into the world. They are to love me. And so when the parent beats upon the child and says, I'm doing this because I love you, the child becomes confused and they begin to associate pain and suffering with love. And then later on, when the child comes of age, they look for relationships, and they call them love relationships, that fulfill the same relational model that they had to their parents. In other words, they're looking for a relationship where they can be abused.
Because they
perceive the abuse to be reflective of someone loving them, just like a lot of people perceive fear and all the fear mongering to be reflective of them finding truth. No, it's not about truth. It's about the conditioning that we have received over years, in some cases over a decade, in some cases over many decades, that will cause us to continue to pursue fear-based programs and then consider it to be somehow truth. That's not truth. It has nothing to do with truth. And you can't find truth if you're simply being traumatized and re-traumatized, and the whole process is really really about fulfilling this need to be fearful. One other thing that comes to mind, too, is that one of the reasons why people tend, when they get to that point where fear becomes their paradigm, because it's so much more easier when you simply, have this orientation where you perceive yourself to be a perpetual victim. See, when you perceive yourself to be a perpetual victim, then you don't have to be personally responsible. You don't have to change anything per se. You can go on to the forum, you can go on to the internet, and you can shout at other people and yell at other people and say, look, you need to wake up. But in terms of being personally responsible, you don't have to be personally responsible, because there's always some boogeyman out there who has more power than you that you've externalized power to. The New World Order, reptilian shapeshifters, the global elite, the global bankers, whatever the case may be, George Bush, Al Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, whatever the case may be. We always externalize power. The point being is that a lot of people, when they get into the alternative information, they feel as if they're being in power. But in point of fact, they become more weak. Why? Because they don't feel as if they have any power to change anything. And so in the absence of feeling powerful, and then in the presence of being and feeling powerless, you don't necessarily have to be personally responsible, because you can always blame all of your troubles, all of your strife, all of your struggles on someone else. Well, what better way to control someone than to give them that mentality, to where they perpetuate this victim mentality, and they maintain themselves inside perpetual victimhood indefinitely? Well, then if a person maintains that mentality indefinitely, you don't have to do anything to control them, because their mentality will control them for you.
Jeez. No, this is interesting. This is not a theory that I've ever, or a study I've never really looked into, truth be told. I started listening to the alternate media with, in particular, someone named Alex Jones, who I'm sure you know very well, who keeps surfacing into some of the mainstream media, crossing over. And to be quite honest with you, I referred maybe one or two people to him as I was trying to figure out what I thought happened on 9/11. And most of those people came back at me and said, why are you referring me to some nut bar yelling all the time? So I've never been able to really wake up anybody, truth be told. I've got a few people to look into it, but all the referrals I've saying, look at this YouTube video, listen to this particular talk show host, alternate media, I usually just get laughed at, saying, have you lost your mind? So in other words, the alternate media is worse for most people than the mainstream media. And I'm talking about people that are not aware of what's going on. You see what I mean?
Yes. So, as an example, Alex Jones, his information is not intellect-based. I think we need to be clear about this. It's not intellect-based. It doesn't cause people to think intellectually. It causes people to react, and in many cases, react emotionally. And that's why, in terms of how he presents his information, the preeminent emotion that he projects onto people is fear. So I'm not surprised. And I follow Jones's work for about 3 or 4 months early on. That was during the time where I was, looking into reptilian shapeshifters and all that stuff. I mean, that's the whole paradigm. All of these fear-based programs, you will find that people who gravitate toward that information, there is a particular way and manner of thinking that's associated with that group of people. Now, I'm also going to tell people, don't take offense, that I also was part of that in terms of being in that group of people who were out searching for this information. But much of that information, it wasn't intellect-based. It wasn't designed to cause me to think intellectually or to intellectualize any information being projected by whether it's Alex Jones or anyone else for that matter. It was based upon causing me to react in fear. So if I tell someone, yeah, go check out Alex Jones, and they go and they go check out Alex Jones, and they're not in the matrix of fear that I may have been in during that time, they're going to look at that information and say, this guy's an absolute nut job. But what they're observing is not necessarily the information, because in point of fact, some of this information is factual. A lot of it is just fear mongering. A lot of it's just fear mongering. But the point is, but they won't pinpoint that which is factual, because their paradigm, that's not what they're looking for. What they will pinpoint is his behavior. They will pinpoint the stage show. They will pinpoint the exaggeration. They will pinpoint the fear mongering. They'll pinpoint him yelling and screaming, or having his shirt off doing shows, or having his face painted and all. I mean, all of this stuff, I mean, it's so far over the top. And what happens is that other people who may even consider the truth that he has to share, because they see him behaving in this way, they may be totally turned off to even considering the information, and then also considering any other alternative information that doesn't fit within the scope of the mainstream or the official version of any given event. So this is to say that we have to be very careful. If something is putting you in a state of fear, if it's sensationalized, if it's so over the top, if it's yelling and screaming and calling people sheeple, that's not an intellectual process. And I'm going to say it, and people don't take offense, but the manner in which Alex Jones presents his information is not for the intellectually gifted. It's not for individuals who are ethically and morally sound, who are mentally sound, who are psychologically stable. His information is designed to appeal to people who are thinking on a ninth or 10th grade level and also have levels of psychological dysfunctionality. That's precisely why we have to think critically about any given information stream that we receive, including what people may perceive to be alternative. It's not alternative. And I explain this in the book. It's not alternative. It's just demographic specific programming for those people who do not abide to any official claim or any official version that's proposed by the mainstream news. We have programming for you. And that's precisely why Alex Jones, he crosses genres, if you will. He's on CNN. He's on Reuters. He's on RT. There's a reason why, because he's part of the global construct of control that is both the mainstream and the alternative news. There is only one other element that we should consider outside the mainstream and alternative, and that is independent research, independent researchers, independent news. Those are individuals who will present information to you based upon conclusive evidence and proof, and is not designed to put you in a state of fear and compromise your intellectual processes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating. You're the first I've ever heard really explain that, and that's powerful. That's powerful to me, because I really didn't quite understand. I just couldn't stand the yelling, but I did find myself tuning into it, probably mainly because he was quite topical. For instance, he would try and decode the stories of the day, so he was very current, let's put it that way. So if something happened today, then I could hear an explanation for it. And it always went back down to FEMA camps and other dangerous things. But yeah, now I understand. So I guess for a while I was at a mentally challenged level, but I did get out of it.
The thing, look, I was too. So I want people, don't take offense, because like I said earlier, I use myself as an example. I've been through all of it. I've been through all the fear-mongering propaganda, all of the supposed conspiracy theories. Anyone out there, if you feel like I've researched all this and I know more about this, look, I've already been. I have documentary works on it. You can go to LennonHonorFilm.com. I have years and years of worth of documentary, full-fledged documentary films dealing with these different topics. But that's when my mentality was such that it had been compromised to a particular degree, to where my whole orientation wasn't necessarily based upon solutions. It was based upon defining problems. And in the process, and just simply defining problems, you don't necessarily progress to a point where you feel empowered. And I didn't feel empowered. So you all will see, if you go back and look at my earlier documentary work on LennonHonorFilms.com, there's a certain aesthetic, a certain orientation to it. But as you progress through my documentary work, you see a progression, not only in terms of the topics that I address, but also in terms of my intellectual aptitude. Why? Because I had transcended the paradigm of fear. And I will tell you all that Alex Jones, what he does is he perpetuates fear. And in perpetuating fear, it's not an intellectual process. And I'm not trying to demean anyone. I'm not trying to demean anyone who follows his work. I just want you to understand that I've been there, but I've also recognized that I had to reach beyond that paradigm because it was so disempowering. How are we going to make a sincere change when all we're doing is complaining about, the latest conspiracy theory, complaining about FEMA death camps, we're complaining about reptilian shapeshifters, we're complaining about the global elite, we're complaining about the New World Order, but we don't provide any solutions that are real and tangible for people, and all we're doing is perpetuating the fear paradigm. That's how you maintain people in a state of control, and if you can control people in that way, they will not have adequate intellectual process. There's no way, because when you're stuck inside a perpetual state of fear, your whole ability to think critically and think clearly is compromised. So a lot of people, in terms of their pursuit for truth, oftentimes it's really the pursuit of fear. And Alex Jones provides that particular paradigm for a lot of people, and he's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, well, most of my listeners, you're not insulting them when you tell them that Alex Jones is not good for them. Most of the people that listen to me are definitely well past Alex Jones. So I spent a few weeks with him. I still download his podcasts in case I run out of things to listen to, but I rarely ever get to them because there is too much screaming and yelling, and we are not getting anywhere with him. He certainly doesn't offer any solutions other than to just be afraid, and he does seem to be spinning people in circles. And, of course, the other suspicious part of him is he won't talk about many, many, many topics. And everything, in my opinion, should be allowable for discussion and conversation, whether it be right or whether it be wrong. So, yeah, you don't have to worry about insulting anybody here about Alex Jones. Well, why don't we go through a bit of your book, and maybe you can hit some of the high points, whatever you want to talk about with regards to it. We've certainly touched on lots of it. Let's What can we talk about that we haven't really touched on today?
Well, defining what the 911 fear-based mind control program is. I think that that would be a good place to start.
Yeah, okay, you've got three stages, right?
Yes. Okay. So for instance, my book is titled The 911 Fear-Based Mind Control Program. And anyone interested, you can find it on lennonhonor.com/the digits 911. Okay, lennonhonor.com/911. It's available on paperback and also as a PDF download. As I began to ask critical questions about September 11th, and again, it's an intellectual process here. So, you know, though I can talk about other folk whose whole orientation is based upon ultra emotionalism and causing people to react and scream and shout and so forth and so on, when I do my work, I specifically focus on the intellectual process. And one of the important aspects of intellectual process is understanding basic elements of human psychology. So in my book, one of the things that in terms of my orientation towards September 11th was to look at it critically from a point of human psychology. And so now the title of the book, The 911 Fear-Based Mind Control Program, now we're dealing with the mind, we're dealing with human psychology and controlling the psychological condition of the human species. And it's a program. In this program, there's three stages to the 911 Fear-Based Mind Control Program. The first stage is the installation. The second stage is the triggering. And the third stage is the reinstallation. The installation took place on September 11, 2001, when the global population was bombarded with images of death and destruction that had profound implications on a global scale, and it was broadcast live to the global population. We were all traumatized on September 11th. And I stated before, whenever we're traumatized, we begin to be fearful. As a consequence, out of this fear, we begin to externalize power, and as a consequence, we are controlled. So on September 11th, we were bombarded with images, with sounds, sights, in some cases for people who were there touched, even smells, if you were there at Ground Zero on September 11, 2001. And one of the things I propose in the book is, and in terms of human psychology, is that whenever we are unable to process a particular trauma in our life, that trauma is submerged within the subconscious mind. So people who are listening in, just think of a circle. And then in the middle of that circle, horizontal, there's a horizontal line. Okay, anything above that horizontal line in that circle would be your conscious mind. OK, anything below that line, that would be your subconscious. OK, subconscious implies below. OK, and that line, that's what we call the liminal. That's why when they say subliminal messages, we're talking about messages, images, symbols that are embedded below that normal threshold of visual and auditory perception. That's that line. So anything below that subliminal, it's going to the subconscious. That's why you see SOB, which implies below. So one of the things I talk about inside the book, and this is a basic aspect of human psychology, is that the trauma of the event on September 11th was not processed consciously by the global population. Let me say that again, that the trauma of the event of September 11, 2001 was not processed consciously by the global population. Okay. Now, this is why simply focusing in on who we think did it and why is not necessarily as important, at least in terms of my particular in my book, because that's not what I address in the book, because it doesn't necessarily matter who you think did it or who someone else thinks did it and why. Because ultimately, the same traumatization occurred for the global population, irrespective of who we think did it and why. So that's why this question of human psychology and psychological condition of the human species being manipulated by the trauma. So the trauma of September 11, 2001, there was three, and I explained this inside the book, there were three main reasons why the conscious mind could not process the trauma of September 11, 2001. The conscious mind operates to define undefined elements and to solve problems. Okay, it is aware of time, past, present, and future. The subconscious mind is not aware of time, and its preeminent occupation is to protect the conscious mind from experiencing levels of psychological trauma. So when do we experience psychological trauma? We experience psychological trauma whenever we cannot define an undefined element or whenever we cannot solve a problem. September 11th was an undefined element, and it was a problem, and we could not define it for three reasons, and we could not solve the problem for three main reasons. Number one was sensory overload. Sensory overload simply means that your senses are overloaded with too much information. You receive too much input, and as a consequence, your conscious mind begins to experience psychological trauma because it can't define an undefined element or solve a problem if it's receiving too much information at one time. On September 11th, we were given too much information at any given time, and we were being bombarded with the same images over and over and over again. There was also degrees of conflicting information, which is a second aspect in terms of why it is that we were unable to define or to solve the problem. September 11th. And when I say define an element or define September 11th or to solve the problem, I'm talking about psychologically speaking, to where in our mind we can say, okay, I understand what's taking place here and I understand what's happening. I understand the implications of what's happening and I also understand how it's impacting my psyche. See, we were unable to do that. Main reason number one was sensory overload, receiving too much information. Within an 8-hour period, we had, you know, it was a media saturation, images, video being shown over and over again, repetition in the magazines, in the newspapers, you know, over the internet to a particular degree, all over the radio, on the television, etc. That sensory overload. The second element was conflicting information, because there was so much conflicting information that was being propagandized by the mainstream news, mainly later on by the alternative news. This conflicting information causes the conscious mind to experience psychological trauma. Why? Because the preeminent objective of the conscious mind is to define undefined elements. How are you going to define undefined elements if information that you're receiving is conflicting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that in and of itself, it makes it impossible for an individual to define an undefined element or to solve a problem if they have conflicting information. And then the third element, and the most important element of all, the most influential element, and we've already talked about this here today, and that is the intellectually stifling emotion of fear. I'm going to say it again, the intellectually stifling emotion of fear. That's why all the fear mongerings, it's not designed, that fear mongers out there, it's not designed to appeal to your intellectual processes. And in point of fact, it compromises your intellectual process. Why? Because when we are in a state of fear, we do not think critically. We do not think intellectually. Why? The emotion of fear, it stimulates in the subconscious mind a program that's inherent in the species. And that program is flight or flight. Okay,
fight or understand flight,
it. Yeah. Yes. So whenever we're triggered in this way, it's an emotional reaction, and then we're either going to fight or we're going to flee. On September 11th, were we fighting? No, we were fleeing.
Mm-hmm.
Collectively, we externalized our identity onto those people who were running down the streets. They became us. We were fleeing. We were not fighting in anywhere. In point of fact, in terms of the psychic atmosphere of September 11th, the lack of military response from the beginning alluded to the notion that we are in a state of flight collectively as a nation, if you will, and then broadcast to the global population, we are in a state of flight globally now. See, mm-hmm. you and when you're in a state of flight, you're not thinking intellectually. You're just trying to get away. You're trying to run. Okay, you're trying to move away from whatever it is that you perceive to be so much more powerful than you, that you've externalized power to. So those three elements, conflicting information, a sensory overload, and the intellectually stifling emotion of fear, compromise the conscious mind's ability to process the trauma of September 11, 2001. Now, the question becomes, and this is the central theme of my book, where did that trauma go? Well, the subconscious mind, its preeminent objective is to protect the conscious mind from experiencing psychological trauma. So whenever you can't define an undefined element, which was September 11th, or solve a problem, which was September 11th, your subconscious mind will take the undefined element or the unresolved problem, and it will take it and submerge it within the subconscious mind and begin to resolve it there. Therefore, your conscious mind can continue to proceed without maintaining this disposition of psychological trauma, wherein you can't define an undefined element or solve a problem. So I want people to make this more clear. The conscious mind can only think about one thing at a time. The subconscious mind thinks about everything. It can think about anything at any given time. It can think about many different things at many different times. The way that it works is totally different than the conscious mind. But I want people to think about this. Mm-hmm. If you think about the problem in your life that you have been unwilling to solve, because we all have them. It's like, I've been trying to solve this problem for years. Some of us have been trying to solve this problem for decades. Or an undefined element. I've been trying to define this element. I've been trying to figure out what really happened on September 11th for the last 12 years. Just imagine if consciously you could only hold that thought in your mind, because your conscious mind can only think about one thing at a time. Just think, if you could only hold that one thought in your mind, you couldn't think about anything else. So that problem or that undefined element, and that's all you could think about 24 hours a day, you would literally go insane.
Yeah,
think
I
about
think,
it, people.
Yeah, well, I think I've been thinking about it for a long time too, actually.
Yeah. But imagine if that was the only thing you could think about. So in other words, you can't think about, okay, I need to eat today. I need to sleep today.
Yeah.
You know, I have this responsibility. I have the children to take care of. I got a job to go to. You know, you can't think about any of that. All you can only think about, the only thing you can think about is September 11, 2001, a trauma. You would literally go insane. In point of fact, people who do go insane, oftentimes the reason why is because there is an imbalance between their conscious awareness and their conscious mind and subconscious mind. And then there are aspects or problems that are stuck in their conscious awareness, and they're maintaining. That's all they think about. And and it's not being submerged within the subconscious mind, so that their whole orientation is based upon a problem. And therefore, they begin to express as a form of behavior modification the mannerisms and the behavior patterns associated with a problem that is centralized in one's conscious awareness that one can only think about And it can't think about anything else. That's all they can think about. So the point being is that the subconscious mind, its objective is to take that issue or even take a trauma, submerge it within the subconscious mind where you don't have to think about it 24 hours a day, mm-hmm. and it will process it and try to define the undefined element or solve the problem. And therefore, your conscious mind can go along and deal with something else. Okay, the conscious mind can deal with only can deal with one thing at a time. Subconscious mind can deal with all kinds of things at any given time. So the point being is I asked the question, where did the trauma go, the undefined element of September 11 go? It was submerged within the subconscious mind. These are basic elements of human psychology. Now, the fascinating part about this is that the trauma of September 11, 2001, once submerged within the global population subconscious mind, would have by now, because here we are almost 12 years later, now it would have resolved itself. But what has happened is the subconscious mind has been specifically re-traumatized. And because the subconscious mind does not distinguish between past, present, and future, the re-traumatization of the subconscious mind makes the subconscious mind think that September 11, 2001 is taking place right now. How is this traumatization taking place? Well, now we get to the second part of the 913-based mind control program. There's the installation, which took place on September 11, 2001, where we were inundated with information. We had sensory overload, conflicting information. We were in fear. And the trauma of the event was submerged in the subconscious mind. That's the installation of the 913-based mind control program. The second part of it is the triggering of the 911 fear-based mind control program. In other words, you can trigger the subconscious program of September 11, 2001, and you trigger it. So what you do is you trigger the trauma. And when you trigger the trauma, what takes place is the person unconsciously, it's not a conscious, most work are not consciously aware of this. They begin to feel the same emotions that they felt on September 11th because it is triggering within their subconscious mind. And how is this being done? The triggering of this trauma. Well, this is done at specific times in the year. And point of fact, there is a 4-week period leading up to May 2nd of any given year. Since May 2nd, 2011. Yeah. And then since September 11, 2001, in the 6 weeks leading up to the anniversary of September 11, 2001 of any given year, you start to get stories in the news. People get this. And it's in the book. I've been talking about this for years. It's in the book. Yeah. You start to get stories in the news. I'll read it right here because in my book I have a bookmark. You can just take the bookmark out when you get the book. And you can just put this on your wall. You know what type of stories are coming out in the news. Get this.
Yeah.
In the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th of any given year, you start to see an infusion of trigger stories in the news. And these trigger stories, what they do is they trigger the subconsciously embedded trauma of September 11th, which has been unresolved. See?
Yes,
so
yes.
If you continue to trigger the trauma, what you're doing is re-traumatizing the subconscious mind. Here are some of those trigger stories.
What page is that? What page is that?
Okay, I have it on the bookmark. If you want to look at it inside the book, this is called Mass Media Cyclical Timeline Program Number 1, I believe. You can look at number 2. So Mass Media Cyclical Programming Timeline Number 2 on page 97.
Yes, okay.
So anyone who has a book, you're listening to this, just turn to page 97. And I have it right here. It's perfectly predictable, these stories, when they come out in the news. So then there's two cycles. There's that cycle in the 4 weeks leading up to May 2nd of ever since 2011, which was the supposed death of Osama bin Laden, which was a psyops. It didn't actually take place. That's just psychological warfare.
Yes.
That particular cycle, within the 4 weeks leading up to May 2nd, we find a steady buildup of Osama bin Laden-related stories in the news. Topics include, number one, stories about Osama bin Laden, stories about Al-Qaeda, stories about SEAL Team 6, terror threats, imminent threats, cyber terrorism, Arab Spring, and plane problems. Okay, this is within the 4 weeks leading up to May 2nd. And it's not that these stories don't come out in the news at other times in the year, but what we find is a concentration of these stories. But that's not the main program. That's just kind of like that's kind of sets the stage. That's the undercard, if you will. The main event is September 11th, the most traumatizing event of our time.
Yes.
And so therefore, within
amen
the
on
weeks,
that.
It's so true. It's so true.
It is.
I have the saying that if you know someone's trauma and they don't know their trauma, you can trigger their trauma. And then based upon how you trigger their trauma, they're going to react in a predetermined way. So, brother, if you knew my trauma, and I'm calling you brother, if you don't mind. Brother,
no,
if you knew
okay.
my trauma, you could say, OK, I know Lynn's trauma. And if I want to control him, all I have to do is trigger his trauma. So once I trigger his trauma, he's going to react the same way each time because I know his trauma and I know how he's going to react to the re-traumatization or the triggering of his trauma. See, it's like a chess game. Mm-hmm. If you know someone's move or if you know that, I'm going to move my rook right here. I'm going to trigger them in a particular way and they're going to move and they may even get the rook. But then I already set them up because my next move, I have them in check. I checkmate. OK, so the point being is that if in chess, if you know what someone else is going, what their move is, or even on a basketball court, for those of you who like to play basketball. this, whatever. If you know someone's move in advance and you can trigger them to move in that way, you could win every single time. Well, that's what's precisely what mass media is doing. And in triggering the trauma, what they're doing is they're causing people to relive the trauma and the fear associated with September 11th. And therefore, you maintain people in a state of control. How so? Because when you traumatize or re-traumatize someone, they feel fearful. Once they feel fearful, they externalize power. Once they externalize power, you maintain them in a state of control. So what mass media does in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th, 2000, of any given year since September 11, 2001, is it issues trigger stories. Now, y'all just look in the news right now because we are in the cycle, this main event cycle right now. Within the 6 weeks leading up to the anniversary of September 11, 2001, we find a steady buildup of September 11, 2001 trigger stories in the news. Topics include, number one, and it's always number one, terror threats.
Yep.
Cyber threats.
Well, you're bang on with that one. We just had one, right?
That's bang on. That's right. And I've been talking about this for 3 years.
Yeah, I never heard you 2 years ago. Where you been?
Oh, I've been around. It's just that this hasn't been my focal point because I've dealt with so many other topics. But the point being is that I have this saying, it's perfectly predictable. And if you know that it's perfectly predictable, there's no need to be fearful when these fake terror threats come out. These fake Al-Qaeda terror threats in Yemen, that's just a psyop. There's no evidence or proof whatsoever.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too, because that is the name of my website, rebranded, of course, Fakeology. And I need to hear that from you. I need to hear that word fake.
Just, you know, you make up what mass media does is it makes up stories to trigger trauma. It has nothing to do with the story. It has to do with triggering the trauma, the subconsciously embedded unresolved trauma that the global population, we're not consciously aware of it. Most people are not consciously aware of it. So what you can do is you can trigger that trauma in people and cause them to react in a particular way. And ultimately it brings forth a level of control because they always externalize power. So you give them stories about terror threats, fake terror threats, mind you, no evidence or proof, or cyber threats with the New York Times magazine website going down. Oh, we think that it might be a terrorist. You don't. What do you mean you think it might be? Mm-hmm. You have no evidence or proof to prove that. But what you do is you trigger the trauma because people, when they hear terror threats, what do they think of? What on the subconscious level? And it's in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th on the subconscious level, you think September 11, 2001. When you hear cyber threats, any level of threat or terrorist threat, there's trigger words. There's trigger digits. 911 is a trigger digit nowadays. 9-11 is a trigger digit. Yes. 9/11 is a trigger digit. You can cause people to feel certain levels of certain emotions that are associated with September 11, 2001 simply by using trigger words. But the trigger stories really get people. So, for instance, terror threats, cyber threats. Number two, bomb threats. There was another story about implantable bombs. Now they're talking about, what is this foolishness? Someone had sent it to me and posted it on my Facebook page. I'm on Facebook under Lennon Honor. Breast implant suicide bomb threat at Heathrow Airport.
Unbelievable.
It's perfectly predictable. It's right here inside the book. But who comes up with this stuff? Okay, now we have breast implant bombs. Are you serious? Number three, stories about Al-Qaeda. And that's been media saturation for the last 2 weeks. Okay, that's because we're in this cycle. Stories about Al-Qaeda and potential threats and so forth and so on. Stories about Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden's been back in the news. They even said there's a new Osama bin Laden. He's the leader of Al-Qaeda 2.0. Okay, this is fanciful stuff.
Yeah,
it's totally ridiculous. See, now, in the absence of intellectual process, and if we succumb to the fear, we would accept these stories and not ask critical questions like, where's the evidence or proof? Or we may not even ask the question like, does this even make sense? Intellectually speaking, it's an insult to me, right? Implantable suicide bombs, and they're using breast implants now? Al-Qaeda using breast implants? Are you serious? They already had underwear bombs, okay? They've had ember bombs. They had body bombs, and implantable bombs, shoe bombs. Now we have breast implant bombs. It's fanciful stories. But again, if your intellectual processes have been compromised and you succumb to all the fear mongering, you will accept this without any critical thinking or critical thought whatsoever. Other stories that come out in the news in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th, every single year too, mind you. And it's a concentration. Number five, TSA and plane problems. That's why right now in the news, there's all these stories about plane crashes in the news. But the plane crashing propaganda, what is that about? Yeah. Because September 11th was the ultimate in plane crashes, plane problems. So what happens is that as we get close to September 11th, mass media issue stories about plane crashes and plane problems, and this triggers the trauma. Your subconscious mind does not distinguish between past, present, and future. So when it hears plane problems, when it hears bomb threats or Al-Qaeda or terror threats, what it does, it thinks that September 11th is taking place all over again. Number six, national security issues, which is big in the news right now. There's also trigger characters like Pastor Terry Jones who comes out and he starts to stir the pot a little bit more. That's all designed to trigger the trauma of September 11th, 2001.
Yeah, number eight,
y'all,
yeah.
Yes, he is. He's just an actor. Number eight.
Thank you.
Credible, but unconfirmed threats. This, too, is conflicting information. How can something be credible but also unconfirmed?
Yes, that's brilliant.
That's double speak.
That's perfect. Yes.
See, now, whenever people do that, whenever they use double speak or it's just a statements that are in contradiction, the sentence is in contradiction to itself, it accesses a subconscious mind. Why? Because the conscious mind cannot define that undefined element, and it can't solve that problem. Why? Because it's not even that problem that is being presented. It's not even operating in a logical way. That's like me saying, like, for instance, I've done this on other radio shows, and I've done this in videos. Like, we can access each other's subconscious mind very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Mass media does it, and it's down to a precise science. So we can do it very easily. And here's an example of what I mean. And for you viewers, just think about this. You ain't even got to think about it, but just listen to what I'm saying here. You have two choices between what you can eat right now.
Mm-hmm.
You only have two choices. The first choice, you can have a slice of apple cake. The second choice is you can have a slice of apple cake. Which one would you prefer?
Right.
See, that accesses the subconscious mind because your conscious mind can't process that. Or I can say something like, I'm really enjoying this radio interview yesterday.
Right.
What?
It's a conflict.
It's a conflict, right?
So that goes right downstairs. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it goes straight. Because, see, your conscious mind experiences psychological trauma when something like that is stated. So what happens is the subconscious mind activates, takes that trauma and submerges it within the subconscious mind and begins to resolve it. Okay, same thing with September 11th. It wasn't consciously processed because it was so much conflicting information, sensory overload, and fear itself that it was submerged within the subconscious mind.
Okay? And it still is, right? It still is.
Yes. For most people, it is still there. See, by now, it would have already resolved itself in the subconscious mind, but the reason why it hasn't for most people is because it's constantly being re-triggered by these particular types of stories in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th.
And it's not resolved. It's not resolved, is it? They haven't resolved the story. There's no resolution. Would you agree?
And that's a good point that you brought up because John, a friend, he brought this up too, is that one of the reasons why he had proposed that that we can't process it fully, especially consciously, is because the story itself, especially the official version, it's in conflict with what is even reasonable. So how can you ever consciously say, okay, I've processed this particular event? Now, the thing is, there's a difference between processing the event and processing the trauma, okay, because we can intellectually process the event. Intellectually speaking, the official version is doesn't make any sense to me. It's like I don't abide to the official story whatsoever. However, on a subconscious level, the trauma of itself is really dealing with the emotions that are associated with the event. Okay, so in other words, that as we process the particular event, we define the undefined element consciously. We also have to begin to process the trauma associated with that event that is submerged in the subconscious mind, and that essential element. An emotion of fear itself, and to begin to process that too. And one of the reasons why we've struggled with this as a species for the last 12 years is because we have continuously been under psychological warfare, psychological assault, by being traumatized and re-traumatized by the triggering of the trauma of September 11, 2001 with these particular trigger stories. Two other ones real quickly here. So we got credible but unconfirmed threats. Number nine, stories about New York City and Ground Zero. You can expect more of these types of stories as we get closer to September 11th. You'll get more stories about Al-Qaeda threats. You'll get more stories about plane problems. Bomb threats, Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, national security issues, New York City, Ground Zero, and then stories about Homeland Security. All these stories trigger the trauma of September 11, 2001. So that's the second phase. So we got the installation on September 11, 2001, when this trauma was submerged in the subconscious mind of the global population. Over the last 12 years, mass media has used the submergence of the trauma of September 11, 2001 in the subconscious mind as a tool of psychological warfare by triggering the trauma of that particular event. Okay, again, people understand this is intellectual. This is not emotionalism here. I may be talking with fervor, but that's because I want to put my point across. It's an intellectual process here, understanding basic elements of human psychology. You can't approach this fearfully because if you approach it fearfully, you won't be able to intellectualize it. The point being is that by triggering the trauma, you ultimately cause people to be re-traumatized, their subconscious mind is re-traumatized, and then they begin to feel fearful again, just like they felt on September 11th. That's why right now it's a very interesting time where people are a little bit more on edge. The closer we get to September 11th, they're going to be more on edge. This is nothing more than a physiological reaction, if you will, behavior modification that stems from the triggering of a particular trauma that people are not consciously aware of. And then the final stage of the 911 fear-based mind control program, and that is the reinstallation of the 911 fear-based mind control program, which takes place every single year on September 11th, since September 11, 2001. And this is solidified, ladies and gentlemen. It's remarkable to me. That's why it's not an intellectual thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is psychological warfare to cause people to react emotionally. It is a psyops. It's a psychological operation to get the global population. I got to stand up while I'm saying this. To get the global population in a frenzy, manipulate their subconscious mind for 12 years so that every single year in this 12-year period on September 11th, people dress in black. They get together. They have candlelight vigils. They sing songs. They watch video footage of the plane crashing and the people, you know, the death and destruction and the horror and burnt flesh and buildings crumbling to the ground.
It's an occult ritual.
It is. It's an occult ritual. Why do we do that? Why do we participate in that? And I don't, but I'm just saying, why do people do that? We do that because we have been programmed to do that. In other words, because the subconscious mind is being triggered and being re-traumatized, we are compelled to participate on September 11th in this morbid death ritual. That's what I call it. Why? Yes. Yes. We are compelled to do so because we have been triggered in a particular way, and the subconscious mind does not distinguish between past, present, and future. So when we get these stories that trigger us, the Al-Qaeda and the bomb threats and the, ember bombs and implantable bombs, and now we even have, what is this, Heathrow Airport breast implant bombs, all of this triggers the trauma, and then the subconscious mind not knowing, not being able to distinguish between past, present, and future, it begins to believe that September 11th is taking place all over again. In other words, it believes that September 11, 2001 is happening right now. And that's precisely why people, they get and they go and participate in this morbid death ritual. And there's these retrospectives on the news and people watching and they cry. And then on a deeper level, ladies and gentlemen, get this. They bring their children along. And in many cases, their children were not even alive on September 11th and don't know anyone who died on September 11th, 2001. They bring their children along and they make the children participate in this morbid death ritual, and they make them watch it on the television and on the internet. And then what are they doing? They're traumatizing the next generation same program. See, y'all understand this.
They have to get the next generation. They have to get them.
Absolutely. Yes. So you take the most traumatizing event of our time, which was September 11th. See, people underestimate the trauma, psychological warfare, the trauma of September 11th. We're so busy fussing and fighting with each other about who we think did it. We don't think about what is being done to us psychologically. We have underestimated the impact of September 11th on our the psyche of the global population. And as a consequence, mass media understanding, just these very basic elements of human psychology, there's nothing deep about this, ladies and gentlemen, has turned the trauma of September 11th into a tool of massive psychological warfare. And this is what I call the 911 fear-based mind control program.
That's beautiful. Do you have any preachers in your family?
No, I don't. But you know what? It's funny because if you talk with my wife, she will tell you that I don't talk all that much at home. I'm very reserved, very relaxed. But you see, when I talk about these topics, I talk with fervor.
Yes.
And one of the reasons why I do so is because I know it is true.
I just want to, when you talk for 10 minutes like that, I just want to say an amen. Do I hear an amen from the audience?
but again, I speak on it with such fervor. There's other topics where I get to that point too.
With
as well. So for instance, when I talk about the importance of being a father to my children, we have five babies here. The importance of being an honorable man, the importance of taking care of my wife, taking care of my children. I get to that point too. But my wife, she'll tell you that under normal circumstances, I don't really talk all that much. But the point being is that there's two reasons. One, because I know that it's true. Okay, so when I talk about the 911 fear-based mind control program, I've been able to prove this for the last 3.5 years. And if y'all don't believe me this year, just wait till next year, because the same types of stories will come up in the news. It's not that they don't come up in the news at other times during the year, but you'll see a heavy concentration that builds up until we get to September 11th. Y'all think that this Al-Qaeda threat in Yemen, that was the big deal? No, y'all just wait, because we still, how much time we have before September 11th? We still have 1, 2, 3. We have about 3.5 weeks. That's 3.5 weeks of triggering stories that are going to be coming out in the news to trigger trauma in people. See, it's provable. So the point being is that one is because I know that it's true. But two, the reason why I speak with such fervor is because people have underestimated this level of psychological warfare and how particular events can be used, and they can provide us with a mainstream version, an official version that's not true. But then in the process, use something that is not true so as to traumatize people indefinitely. And that's the underestimation. I have to speak on it in this way so that people get it. If there is, if One last thing. Let me just say this real quickly. In the beginning of my book, and I want people to understand, this is why the whole ultra-emotionalism and you know, people going on rants, I want people to understand my heart is not racing. I'm not upset about anything. I'm very relaxed when I'm talking. Even when I get up, you know, it's just a matter of how I speak. But I maintain my disposition as being peaceful and positive. But I want people to understand this dynamic, that the greatest means of control is not actualized through military might, physical subjugation, or brute force.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest means of control is actualized through the manipulation of the psychological condition of the human species. It is about psychological warfare. You don't have to have martial law and tanks on the streets when you have people in a state of mind control, to where all you have to do is trigger them in a particular way, and you know how they're going to react in advance. You trigger their trauma September 11th. You know how they're going to react in advance. They will always, in the midst of being re-traumatized, they will begin to feel fearful. They will then externalize power, and that's how you maintain control. It's not physical, ladies and gentlemen. It is psychological. It is a mental issue. And that's precisely why we have to take a critical look at any given story. But in particular, September 11th, we have to look at it from an intellectual perspective based upon human psychology, because then we can begin to see why it is that mass media is operating as it has for the last 12 years in terms of triggering a subconsciously embedded trauma that we call September 11, 2001. And I have to speak vigorously on this, because I consider this to be one of the most important things that we can do in terms of getting to the truth.
I agree.
Get to the truth based upon trauma and emotionalism. And fear. Because fear, it compromises intellectual process. You have to heal the trauma first, and then you go to the intellectual process of defining that undefined element or solving that problem. I'm so big on that.
So you bring up PSYOP, which is my other main word that I use on fakeologist.com. That is my big word. So my question to you is, PSYOP implies the military psychological operations division, which I think is one of the biggest divisions of the entire military. Like you said, way more important. Put money and effort behind that than into tanks and fanciful weapons. So does that mean that the American military is at war with its people?
Psychologically, yes.
Right. So, they're guns, because they control and own the media. That's one thing that I've come to conclude. It is a military media, whether by accident or by design, because the media is owned by military corporations that are beholden to the American government, where their biggest expense is the military. So to me, it means by default that the American government is at war with its people. And globally. What do you think of that?
Well, what I will say is that the war is psychological in the first place.
Sure. Okay, but that's so as damaging as guns.
Yeah, absolutely. See, and the thing is, the remarkable thing is that you don't have to have guns.
Yeah.
if you can literally cause people to, you can control people simply by triggering their trauma or making up stories that traumatize people or building up what I call supervillain archetypes, these boogeymen. That are not real. You build them up, and then people, they hear about Al-Qaeda, hear about Osama bin Laden. Al-Qaeda is not real, ladies and gentlemen. That's just a figment of the imagination based upon psychological operations. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's no evidence or proof whatsoever. As Osama bin Laden is a mastermind on September 11th. That is just absolutely asinine. But what happens is that if you can control a person's perceptions, it's called perceptions management. That's a military term, okay? Psychological warfare is about controlling a person's perceptions. If you can control their perceptions to where you can give them an unsubstantiated story, you can actually build a whole script around a particular character, i.e. Osama bin Laden, and you can give them a narrative for over a decade, and then it all culminates in this grand stage show where SEAL Team 6, no evidence or proof whatsoever, and the super dogs go in for this, and they find Osama bin Laden, they kill him, they take his body, they blow up one of their helicopters, a wonderful action film stage show, they blow up one of the helicopters because it stops working, and they take his body, they take him to an aircraft carrier, and they dump his body off into the sea. And people believe it to be true. Why do they believe it to be true? Because the psychological operation in terms of Osama bin Laden was not based upon evidence or proof that was tangible, that would stand up in a court of law. It was based upon computer-generated images. Ladies and gentlemen, think about this.
And I will propose this. Sorry to interrupt, because you're good on a roll. I got to get this in. How about this, Lennon? 9/11 was a complete psyop. It was fake from start to finish. What do you think of that?
Well, there are people who propose that as well, that it was a stage show. In other words,
a movie. It was a 102-minute movie. You got it.
Okay, now Now, what I'm going to propose, I'm going to suggest to people, because I'm not in a position at this point to be telling people what I even think about what happened on September 11th, because what happens is that people, they're so inclined to argue about what they think happened, they lose out on the point. The point
is, I know, they'll lose your message.
First.
I know, they'll lose your message,
But that's an important point you're making, and I want to piggyback on that by saying one of the most important movies that anyone can watch is a movie titled Wag the Dog.
Yes, that's a good one.
Y'all want write it down and watch it when you have some time. W-A-G, Wag,
Wag the Dog. Dustin Hoffman Bobby D.
Yes, no. One of my favorite movies of all time. But
very
it's not
good
just
movie.
A movie. It's about what they reveal in the movie about mainstream and alternative news. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so now I lost my place. There was something else I wanted to point out here.
Sorry about that. I hate to derail you, but I had to get in.
There was something else.
You were talking about Osama because here's another thing I want to tell you. I don't think Osama bin Laden is a real person. It is fiction. How about that?
It is a stage show.
He doesn't even have to be a real person.
Yeah, the mainstream news, they spun it, and they said there's Al-Qaeda leader, and he's this ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world, Cobra Commander. Okay, it's the same propaganda
in a cave.
That we got when we watched G.I. Joe. Okay, it's a fiction. But what happens is the mainstream news takes it and spins it for their demographic, people who will buy to the official version, give them a boogeyman. But then the alternative news spins it, and they say, oh, well, wait a minute. Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, it's real, but it's a CIA operation. No, it's not real, period. Okay, so if you can't say that something is, you can't say it's a CIA operation when it's not real in the first place. What you can propose that Al-Qaeda does not exist and that is a psychological operation that is coming from the CIA, okay, maybe, or that's coming from the government, okay, maybe, but you can't simply say without any evidence or proof that Al-Qaeda exists or that Osama bin Laden actually exists. You all see my point here. So I want us to be clear about this in terms of manipulation. What I want to just share real quickly here is that the reason why people bought into this illusion that on May 2nd or May 1st, depending on which calendar you want to use and the conflicting information in the news, the reason why people bought into the supposed assassination of Osama bin Laden was not because of evidence or proof that was tangible. And that's how you know you have people in a state of mind control, a psychological operation. You manage a person's perceptions to where they would take something that is fantasy and they would perceive it to be reality. So how did they do this? They gave us computer-generated images, ladies and gentlemen.
Sure. There's
two main reasons why this worked on people. Number one is because people wanted the boogeyman to be taken out. Because for 10, 11 years, almost 10 years, it's been this whole traumatization of Osama bin Laden, this ruthless terrorist organization, Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, they've been conditioned.
Out here.
We've been conditioned.
So people wanted the superhero to kill the supervillain, just like in the stage show, the action films. Okay, the superhero being Barack Obama, the supervillain being Osama bin Laden. But the second reason why it was sold to people and it worked was because the manner through which it was sold to people was based upon computer-generated images. I want people to understand this is what I mean by psychological warfare, because we're getting it from many different sides, including from the video game industry. We now have two generations of people who have been literally raised on video games.
Yes.
So therefore, computer-generated images, and because video games in terms of they now blur the line in video games between reality and fantasy because the video games are starting to look so real.
Well, I heard they look so real, they have to degrade them because people are getting upset when they shoot realistic people. They've actually gone backwards with the graphics, I've heard.
And I wouldn't be surprised by that. But the point being is that there's a difference between when I was playing Super Mario Brothers back in the 80s versus Black Ops, you know, these video games nowadays. The video games nowadays, they look so realistic. So we have two generations raised on video games, and so they have been led to blur the lines between reality and fantasy. So what do? Because they have now blurred the line between, what is real and what is virtual, what is fanciful, and what is actually, substantive. What do? They issue propaganda in the form of computer-generated images, and they give it to people, and they tell people that this is an accurate representation of reality, and people buy into it. And then, if you look in the upper left-hand corner, when they gave us these virtual computer-generated images, it said in the upper left-hand corner, virtual view. See, we are so mind-controlled as a species now, and we have been conditioned this way, that we will now accept something that says virtual view, that is computer generated images, and we'll use it and we'll take it and we'll accept it as being an evident or actual evidence or proof of a particular claim. In this case, the supposed death of Osama bin Laden. Ladies and gentlemen, Al-Qaeda does not exist. Osama bin Laden, as this ruthless terrorist who's out there hiding in caves, that's just a fantasy.
It is.
If you're running a psychological operation, you are basically managing people's perceptions to where they believe that something like Osama bin Laden exists, even though there's no evidence of proof, or that Al-Qaeda exists, or that even though there's no evidence of proof, or that the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico was the greatest psychological catastrophe of time, even though there's no evidence of proof to prove such a case. This is psychological warfare. Psychological operation. So I want people to understand that it's not necessarily physical these days. It is psychological.
You got it. And 9/11 was a fictitious event. It was a movie. And the other movie to go along, of course, my listeners know, September Clues, is another excellent clue to show you that what you were seeing was not real. It was virtual. Did you ever get to see that movie, by the way, September Clues?
Brother, I've seen all of them.
You've seen them all. Well, that one is a big one for me. It turned the corner for me, and Clues Forum was another thing where they illustrated that just about everything is being manufactured by the military. And that's why I said the Psychological Operation Division of the military is turned its guns against its own people in the world. And everything, like you said, is being manufactured for trauma-based mind control. And there is almost nothing in reality going on that's negative the way we're told. Nothing. I cannot watch one story or read one thing on the newspaper or on the internet and believe it. That's how bad we've got, I think.
And, you know, you make up a very important point, and that is, and I talk about this inside my book, that you know, three things that people can do to heal the trauma of September 11, 2001. And one of those things is to begin to purify your information stream. And the reason why is because mass media will have you believe that that what's taking place on the planet is nothing more than death, destruction, war, and gore 24 hours a day, and there's nothing that you can do about it. Ladies and gentlemen, that is a fiction.
Okay? Unplug your TV.
Look, not only unplug it, just get it. We haven't had three of my youngest babies don't even know what a television is.
That is brilliant. That is brilliant. Okay. That is brilliant.
They don't know what a television is. They don't know what all this death and destruction and, you know, supposed wars. Nowadays, you don't even have to have a war. Just put out the images, make some fanciful stuff up, and people think there's a war going on. Ain't no war going on. People understand that it's just psychological operation to traumatize people. I call it horror news. You present fictitious events all around the world. You present these fictitious events that are not backed by any evidence or proof, and you horrify people, and in the process, you traumatize people. People are fearful. They think that the world's going to end. They think that all these horrible things is going to take place or are taking place, and as a consequence, people externalize power, and as a consequence, they're stuck in a state of control. Well, look, ladies and gentlemen, the mainstream news does it. The alternative news does it, and we have to be very clear about this. This world, I mean, all of this propagandization of death and destruction and doomsday-like scenarios, it's just propaganda, ladies and gentlemen. It's just designed. It's put out there to traumatize you. And as long as you're traumatized, you're going to be fearful. You're going to externalize power. And that's how we're being maintained in control. It is a psyops, nothing more.
Excellent. What do you talk about on your radio show on a week? How often do you do it? And what do you normally talk about?
Yeah, I do a radio show on Saturday. So I have one just in a couple of minutes here.
Yes.
On LennonHonor.com. That's Transcending Media Manipulation. So, you know, in line with what we talk about here, various psyops. So what I do is I look at various degrees of media manipulation, the types of stories that are coming out in the news right now. I'm focusing specifically in on the 9/11 fear-based mind control program because September 11th is just around the corner. So yes. I outline how the stories, you know, these are just nothing more than scripts, and that you can actually follow the scripts. There's a timeline. It's perfectly predictable, and you can follow it, and it all makes sense within the script. And reality, however, is just a stage show. Okay, it's just a psyop. So
I agree.
Every single Saturday at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on LennonHonor.com. And then on Sundays, I have live video streams. And that on Sunday at 12 noon, I have a live video stream, Visions of Manhood. And then my wife and I, we have a live video stream at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Positive Relationships. And in addition to that, I have a YouTube page, got a whole lot of content going up there all the time. Then we also have premium membership on LennonHonor.com. I have my documentary work there. My most recent documentary work is titled, right in line with what we've been talking about, The Global Motion Picture Stage Show. Ladies and gentlemen, much of what is being presented in the news, mainstream and alternative, is just as fictitious as part of a stage show. Just like people go to the movies to watch a stage show, well, there's people who turn into the news and watch a stage show.
The
only real difference is that people, they go to the news and they may walk away and say, okay, I was just watching it and it's just a fantasy and there was actors. Okay, they can walk away from it. But with the news, mainstream and alternative, the difference is people believe it to be 100% factual and true. That's one of the greatest problems that we're facing as a species. We are allowing psychological operations to impede upon our perceptions to such degree that we accept fantasy 100% as being true. That's a serious problem.
Wow. Where do you get the energy and the time? And your videos are quite professionally done. How do you do that?
Well, I've just been working on it for many, many years now. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank, while I'm on here, I want to thank everyone who's been supportive of me and my wife, because it has not been easy. We're raising five young children. The youngest is 2 years old and the oldest is nine. And we have had some serious challenges, but we have had so much wonderful support from people over the years. And again, I want to thank my wife, because none of this work would have been possible without her support.
Right. So you can make a living doing this work that you're doing?
Now, I'm not going to say make a living, brother, because the point of fact of how we're living, it is not honorable in terms of our living conditions. Okay.
Really?
But what I can say is that you can help people. And if you help people and your heart is in the right place, things will work out to such a degree to where you can, at the very least, be able to maintain a subsistence lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've been able to maintain. We're seeking to reach beyond that paradigm, too. But in the meantime, I'll continue to help people in any way that I possibly can.
Well, no, I think you're doing the Lord's work with what you're doing. This is what you're doing. I have never seen anyone else really push. I think it's really super important. You have a lot of overlap into what I talk about. And I think it's powerful what you're doing, and I also really support your relationship and your male power message, which I think is being subverted on purpose by the mainstream media, those that control us. So I think those are two really excellent memes that you push, and I don't see anyone else doing it. Definitely, I don't see the combination of the two. So I'm actually going to watch your relationship stuff. That sort of interests me as well, because I'm almost burnt out on all the fakeology and the 9/11 stuff, to be honest with you. I want to see some positive stuff, so we can all use relationship help.
Yeah, most definitely.
Especially if we're deep in this 9/11 stuff that's burning us out. And earlier you said, well, you put it in your subconscious, and if you leave it in your conscious, you're going to go crazy. Well, I'm afraid to say, I think I have at least half of my conscious used up with this 9/11 stuff. So I'm not going crazy, but it is an obsession, and it is dangerous, I think.
Yeah, well, what I would say is, you know, take it to where you need to take it, and then when you come to a point of peace with it, then you move on, and you may can come, you know, maybe need to come back to it at a later time, because that's what I've done with different areas of research and topics that I've addressed. But you always have to honor your process. OK, yes. That's what I'm saying. Like when I talk about, you know, the alternative news and how it stagnates people and so forth, I'm not saying that to demean anyone. I'm saying that because I've been there, but I've also progressed beyond that point. And then I also reflect back and I recognize that experience was absolutely necessary for me to be where I'm at. So wherever you're at right now, anyone out there listening, that's where you're supposed to be at. Just make sure you don't get stuck there. See it to its proper conclusion and then move on. And if you ever have to come back to it for any reason, you can do that too. It's all part of the process. I think one of the unique things about what you're doing and what, you know, Brother Friend, he's doing, Mr. Friend. I like his last name.
I like Brother Friend.
Yeah, Brother Friend. What he's doing, a whole lot of other people, is they're bringing their unique perspective on various different topics to the equation. And then other people, when you listen in, you can kind of take different pieces. You don't have to necessarily agree with everything that I propose, or I have to agree with everything that you propose.
Right.
But there are things that you said here, so I'm sure things that I've said here, that resonate with certain people.
Yes.
And that's what it's really all about. So it's not so much about where we're at. It's about what we can contribute based upon where we're at. And as long as we're growing, we're always going to contribute something more. And that's what I've always done. If you go back to my earlier work, there was a certain way that I presented my information. It was a certain kind of understanding that I had. When I look at it now, I'm not necessarily so proud of it, but I recognize that that was where I was at, and it was exactly where I needed to be in order for me to get to where I'm at. And I still have a whole long way to go.
And the other thing we didn't touch on, that we'll maybe touch on again if we have another interview, is we are independent. There's the mainstream, there's the alternative, and then there's the independent. So you would probably classify yourself as independent. So would you ever accept a corporate donation and become dependent? Or would that completely compromise your message? Because it's tempting, wouldn't it be, if you're not doing as well as you want to?
Yeah, and you know, and I've thought about this.
Because that's,
I've thought about,
because
like,
you're good. You're good at what you do, and someone's going to approach you, right? Someone will approach you if you haven't been approached already.
Yeah, well, no, I haven't been approached by like some corporation. I've had people contact me and say, hey, look, I think we can work something out where it can be a business arrangement. But if I don't know you, then I don't feel safe with doing that. Because one of the things that I really uphold is just having integrity. and having a sense of ethics, and not just with the information that I present, but I'm talking about how I live. Y'all will see this, how I live. I have a very high ethical standards, and when I mess up, I apologize to people, profusely, but I'm very clear about it. But I've thought about this. What if Microsoft said, we want to support you with what you're doing.
Sure.
we want to give you, we'll give you $500,000 a year for the next 4 years. And then I'm sitting back here like, I'm barely getting rent paid and I got five babies to take care of. What would I? And, the answer to that question is very simple. And that is that the meaning of my work is not just with what I share. It's about the integrity that's associated with what I share. And if we can't stand up and have ethical principles as men, then it doesn't matter what we're sharing. And I'm going to don't take offense, people. But there's a lot of people out there and they're big time in terms of they're reaching a hole and they're making millions of dollars. But in terms of the manner to which they're impacting people, it's all fear mongering. I can't do that. I cannot live like that.
No, that's because unethical.
It's unethical. Well, the same thing applies to having the influence of, let's say, a corporation saying, "Look, I want to fund you in this particular way, but you only can talk about these topics, or you can only deal with within this scope, or you can only do radio shows on this day and that day." I can't have that because that's unethical too. We have to be able to stand up as men, as righteous men, in point of fact, as honorable men, and not only carry the message but also carry it with a level of integrity, not just how we present the information, but also how we live our lives. And that's the simple answer. And how is it that I'm going to wake up in the morning and be able to look at my wife in the face and feel good about myself when I say, baby, I just took this, $500,000 from such and such and such. We're going to be able to get a nice home this year. But I'm only going to be able to talk about these specific topics.
Yeah.
My wife would look at me with such disappointment. She'd be like, "Oh, you, that's not what men do." So no, there's no way that this is simply not possible. But I have thought about it. What would be the appropriate course? I think for any man, you have to consider your ethical principles in the first place with anything that you do, including the types of funding that you may receive.
Right. So you would probably best rely on donations, which is what a number of podcasters are doing. They're saying, if you see value in this, then you should support it, because otherwise I could be a corporate slave and compromised. Your message would just be immediately compromised, like you said. You'd get a list of talking points, a white list, a black list, and it would be very hard to stay true to yourself, wouldn't it?
Yes, and not just because we sell products and services too on our websites and so forth and so on, but it's not just the level of influence that someone may have by supporting you. It's also about, getting to a point in terms of materially where you don't feel as if in order to do this type of work, you have to sacrifice, what the work is really all about, which is about it's really about helping people. And I want to share this with you because I have been looking for a job, like a 9-to-5 job. We've run businesses for like the last 7 years. I haven't had to work a regular job in I can't remember how long.
Yeah.
But because things have really gotten very difficult, I have been out there looking for a job. I stopped, and actually I did that for about 3 months, and I was unable to land one. I got a whole bunch of rejections. And then last week I was in a store and a guy came up to me and said, "Hey man, you know anyone looking for a job?" And I was like, "What?" And he wasn't like the owner or anything, but he worked for this company. So he gave me the card. I called the company and I left a message. They got back with me. They said, "Send me in the resume." I sent them a resume. And they said next week they'll call me to see about a screening process. And it's not an interview, but to come in and screen. And I'm going to tell you all right now, because of how my wife and I, we have been living and our children have been living, if I get a job, if I get this job per se, I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it because it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
I'm going to still be able to do the work that I'm doing. I probably won't be able to do as much because I'm working
a lot.
Job. But I have a family to take care of, too. And ethically speaking, if you have a family to take care of,
They're first.
Yes, they're first. And as so long as you're not compromising yourself in the process. So, for instance, if I found a job, dealing drugs, which, I know people who do.
Sure.
That would be unethical. But if I'm doing a regular job to sustain a lifestyle, to make sure my family's taken care of, that's okay too. And that has been the main struggle for us, my wife and I, as we've done this type of work for years and years and years. We try to help people. We share information with people. We write books. We do lecture series. We have DVDs, books, et cetera. The true challenge for us is not, the relationship. It's not, the world per se. It's just that financial issue. So at this point, if I get the call next week and they say, "Look, we want you to come in and go through the whole process, screening process, and do an interview, and I get the job," I'm going to take it. But I'll still continue to help people while I'm working that job. Okay, so this to say that has been the struggle, but it also means that anyone can help. I mean, you can help even if you do have a regular job. You can still help someone. You can help by sending in a donation, purchasing a product. product or doing a live radio show, a live video stream, posting up on YouTube. Anyone can help. It's a matter of being committed to that. And I'm definitely committed to that. Whether I'm working a full-time job, I'm running a business, or whatever the case may be, I'm still going to help people in the best way that I possibly can.
Well, that's very good. Very honorable. And I really appreciate this. I know you have to get to your show, and we should reconvene and do it again. And talk about more of your stuff, because you really have a really interesting take on the whole thing, and I haven't really heard anyone else talk about the whole PSYOP aspect of 9/11 as well as you have. So I encourage people to get the book. I read the book. It's very interesting. It's a good companion to this website, Fakeologist.com, and PSYOPs and mind control, that is where warfare is today, and it's a daily occurrence, isn't it?
Absolutely. Very well said. Thank you so much, brother. I really appreciate that you having me on the show. I really enjoy myself.
No, I enjoy myself, and you come back anytime, and I'm going to tune into your stuff now, and that'll be on in a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone else want to tune in, head on over to linenhonor.com. There's a calendar on the right-hand side. Click on that link for today, and there'll be a link to the page, and we'll be up and running in about 15 minutes.
Well, beautiful. I'm going to edit this because we had a little blip in the middle due to my problems on the technical, and I'll post it up, and feel free to put it up on your YouTube. I noticed you did that with John. So
oh, yes.
Feel
so
free.
Once I get the audio, yes, absolutely.
I will put it up. All right, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure, bro. Take care.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Wake Up with Ab. We do this show most Saturday evenings at 8 p.m., and also on random other evenings. To be notified by email of a live show, sign up at our website, radio.abarato.info. On there, you'll find an RSS feed and past show archives. Be sure to check out our website at abarato.info. If you're interested in being a guest on our show, email us at ab@abarato.info. We stream our show 24 hours a day at radio.abarato.info/stream. We're dedicated to figuring out the world of media fakery. Since you're awake, point others to our site and give them the opportunity to see the world in a way they probably didn't know existed.
Side of the Twin Tower exploding through the other side. And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense. Wow.